This is a sermon given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website at saintdave.org.
In my first year here, I was approached by two different people who believed that they were possessed by evil. There is so much I could tell you about those experiences, but for today, what I want to tell you is this, that there are many more people than I realized who are suffering and feel like they've been cast aside and ignored, alienated, dehumanized. So many people among us feel lost and are in real agony. I don't mean they've had a bad day or have some rough life circumstances. I mean that there are quite a few among us who feel like they need deliverance from their suffering. Last week, we heard the story of Legion, who is inhabited by a legion of demons. It is a rich story, full of incredible moments, not the least of which is the moment that the demons he casts out beg Jesus not to send them into the abyss. In this moment, Jesus has mercy upon them, sending them into a nearby herd of swine instead. This brings me to something else I've learned in my experience with people who are suffering, that it is our job to restore one another. Furthermore, I've come to learn that grace and mercy are not just for those we are reclaiming from suffering, but dehumanization and from alienation. Grace and mercy should also be offered to those who are casting them out. And that is a tough pill to swallow. And we cannot do it alone. We have to walk the path that Jesus did to the best of our ability. As flawed and pained as that path may feel, it is our job as Christians to walk in his ways with our faces set to Jerusalem. You may remember from last week that Legion wanted to follow Jesus, but that Jesus told him instead to go home. And I wonder every time I read it if he was welcomed there. No doubt his people have some lingering trauma or a bit of a grudge. He was disruptive, no doubt. And at the very least, they would have for him some residual annoyance that they've been tending or stoking. Of course they would, because grace isn't easy, is it? In fact, as many of us find ourselves on opposite sides of political divide, grace can sometimes feel downright untenable. And so we may find that we can follow Jesus in theory and with really good intentions, but in actuality, it may feel more like, I'll try. That's a loaded phrase, isn't it? I'll try. We all know what that means. It certainly doesn't mean the same as I'll do my best. And this is where we find Jesus in the very next chapter beyond Legion, in the very next story, with a whole lot of I'll try. We have the guy who says, I will follow you wherever you go, to which Jesus replies, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Cryptic though it seems, it's clear that Jesus might have caught a whiff of empty promise in the air. Then we have the guy to whom Jesus says, follow me, who replies, first let me go and bury my father. For that we get the obtuse, let the dead bury their dead response, which seems rather cold. But let's just say that Jesus is calling him out for making excuses. That's what that moment is. Lastly, we have the man who tells him, I will follow you, Lord, but let me first say farewell to those at my home. And that guy gets the old, no one puts a hand to the plow and looks back, is fit for the kingdom routine. Now, I could give you the context and background for each of these phrases that Jesus is using and pick them apart for you. But to do so would be to avoid the point of Luke's storytelling. And Luke is being very clear. Luke is reminding us, the reader, that the job we undertake as Christ's followers is not for the faint of heart. Jesus has set his face on Jerusalem. He knows where he's headed, and he knows what will happen to him, and he has been actively telling his disciples and followers for weeks, "I will suffer and die in order that I might save you," full stop. And in case they aren't getting the message, which we know they're not, he's also showing them the difficulty they will have day after day after day as they walk this last bit of his path with him. He's walking them through the toughest of places in the most horrible of circumstances. He has clearly stated he has no home anymore, nowhere to lay his head. Anyone who has ever been homesick will know what a despondent and empty feeling it is to never be able to go home again. Further, he is walking to his death and chooses, just for funsies, to walk through Samaria. This is about as comfy for them as it would be for a person of color to drive through East Texas. It's about as safe as a caravan of queer folk driving out towards Lubbock. And in case you missed that nuance in the text, let me point you to the part of the story where the disciples ask if they should command fire down upon them from heaven, as if only God can save them now. Who on earth would follow this man, even as he claims to be there to save them? Why do we do it, I often wonder? Why are we even here as Christians? We may not have our faces set on Jerusalem today, but we sure are walking a path that brings us to constant awareness for those who are experiencing poverty, those who are being deported, for those who suffer from hate crimes, and for those who, just like the Son of Man, have nowhere to lay their heads and can never go home again. Moreover, we're walking a path that we know to be cruciform. He told us it would be, and painfully so. The way of the cross is not comfortable. It is not easy and scenic. This way does not come with a free tote bag. This subscription is not commercial free. This path is uphill both ways. It's arduous and painful, and it ends with the cross. So why on God's green earth do we walk it? For the same reason that we show up at the Capitol even when we know how the votes will fall. For the same reason that we all watched The Notebook and sobbed our faces off, many of us more than once. It's because we are compelled by our love for creation and our love for one another. Because just like Legion, we have been in the worst places, and we have experienced God's love in our own lives. This is what Paul is trying to get to in his rather angry diatribe. If we are aligned with the Spirit, all we can do is live in love. We are compelled by this love. We have felt God and known God and seen God here at this altar, here in our hearts, and also in the lives of those who travel with us. We know and believe intrinsically that the power of God will be wielded on our behalf, as if like fire. There is nothing else to do when we have witnessed God at work but to say, "I will follow you," even if it is more half-hearted than we care to admit, even when we know we will never measure up, And even as we have one foot already in the next thing we have to give ourselves to. The desire to follow God is stronger than any other pull I have ever felt. God pursued me relentlessly and gently and asked me to show up over and over again. And I will in every way that I can. Because the outpouring of love back into God's economy is all that I have as an answer to that love. It is insufficient, but it is beautiful. And it is sourced from that of which God created us. It is infinite and mysterious and wonderful. And dear God, may you know that though the love and gratitude I have for you will never measure up to that which you have poured into me, may you know also that I will never stop trying to match it. In your son's name I pray. Amen.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.